Welcome to The Whole Marketer, where we look at the holistic skills, the technical skills, soft skills, leadership skills, and personal understanding that marketers of today need to grow the brands and businesses of tomorrow. We're here to ensure that marketers feel supported and empowered to have successful and fulfilling careers and lives as a whole. Hello, and welcome to The Whole Marketer podcast. This episode is brought to you by Sticky Beak. I'm an advocate for consumer and customers being at the heart of our decision making, and our sponsors of today's episode can help you do just that. Sticky Beak is a platform that marketers have been dreaming of. Rapid global consumer testing to give you affordable, real-time feedback on all of your marketing activation, so you know what consumers think before you go to market and to get that all-important buy-in. Say goodbye to endless discussions and hello to faster, better decisions. Visit stickybeak.co/thewholemarketer to see how Sticky Beak are changing the way marketers work. Today's episode is both a personal, soft, and leadership skill. It's buy-in. And shortly we'll welcome today's guest, Rachel Wheatley, onto the podcast. But before I do, let me tell you why I believe buy-in is so important for marketers. If we want to drive that long-term commercial agenda of the business, then we need to be able to set visions, develop strategies, plans, and activities that the wider business are not only aligned to, but feel part of, to gain motivation, investment, resource to bring these plans to life. As we've discussed in a previous episode with Pete Markey, he often says marketers' roles are part scientist, part politician, and part storyteller, and gaining buy-in involves the latter two. Today's guest is Rachel Wheatley. She is MD of Watertight Business Thinking, a strategic marketing training and consultancy business working with scale-up companies to unlock their marketing capability. She spent 20 years in-house as a marketer, building and leading teams before starting her own marketing consultancy and running that for 13 years before joining Watertight full-time in 2022. So Rachel, welcome to the Whole Marketer podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
As you know, as an avid listener, we always start with a big juicy question. And today's big juicy question is, what is buy-in to you?
That's a good question. So I was thinking about this, and I think the first thing that I would say is to think about buy-in to what? And I think for marketers, that's usually two things. I think there's marketing in general, so as a function. And I think secondly, it's buy-in to you as an individual, or indeed the other individuals in your team. So if you think about the first one, so marketing as a function, buy-in for me means getting understanding in the business around the need for marketing, what it is, what it does, how it can help. And I think particularly that it works at a strategic, not just a tactical level. You will know, lots of marketers who are listening to this podcast will know that marketing is often pigeonholed as a series of tactics rather than operating as at strategic level. And I think it's not always true that you go into a company that really understands what marketing is, what's its depth and breadth. And so buy-in in that context means people outside the marketing team actually knowing that marketing is a lot more than a few tactics. So you're looking to get buy-in to marketing having a wider remit or responsibility or impact and operating at board level, or at least it should do. And in terms of buy-in as you as an individual, I think this is mainly around building your credibility and trust. So that involves good relationship building, your professional credentials, whether that's experience or qualifications. It's proving you know your stuff, you're willing to learn, you ask good questions, you know, all of those good things that actually kind of builds your credibility, trust, reputation as a marketer. So that's broadly speaking what buy-in means to me.
It's a great definition and also an acknowledgement of the journey that many organisations and individuals are still on to get marketing seen as the long-term commercial agenda, strategic powerhouse within their business.
Yeah, I've been in marketing a long time, but you'd think that that had improved somewhat, but doesn't seem to have made huge strides.
I think the strides depend on the industry and depend on the business. And as you said, on the individual, you know, how good a job are they doing at not only getting buy-in for themselves and the belief in what they are trying to achieve, but also in the role that marketing can play in the wider organization.
Yeah, definitely.
And I guess as we do move to being the function, to the powerhouses that lead the agenda, I guess that means gaining buy-in from more stakeholders across the wider business also as well to the plans, the strategies, the visions that we are developing.
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you think are the key challenges for marketers getting buy-in both at an individual level and also at that wider remit of what marketing means?
It's a really good question. And I've seen it from both sides. So I've worked inside companies as their senior marketer. And I've also worked with a lot of marketers who are in-house as a consultant. And I think marketers probably have two key challenges. I think one I would define as being around competence, and the other is around context. So competence I've mentioned, so credibility, your capability, your knowledge, your experience, whether you can show results or impact, you know, anything that contributes to demonstrating that your team and you are competent, that you have the ability to do the job. I think context is probably more challenging. And I think it's more challenging because it involves things that are not necessarily in your gift to change or influence. So I think how supportive the business is but to marketing is one challenge. I think it's very hard to thrive and get buy-in if most of the people around you are resolutely suspicious of marketing and marketers. You know, in that context, I think it's a really long uphill challenge, and you may never solve it in that company. It could be that they're not ready for marketing. They're not mature enough as an organization. I remember in one firm I worked with, it felt like I was dealing with a really difficult teenager, and they hadn't really grown up enough to know how best to get value out of marketing and the marketing team. I think the other challenge related to context is your relationship with your boss. And I see this as really important for marketers to gain buy-in, and you definitely need an ally. So you cannot do your best work if that relationship doesn't work. I've had bosses where I always felt on the back foot. I'm never really able to provide the value I felt was possible. And I've had others who I knew supported me, and I felt completely empowered and able to do that really good work. I think it's exactly the same with clients working as a consultant too. So where that relationship works and you do brilliant work, it's because that relationship with your client works. And I think where it doesn't work, it's really hard to prove the value that you can give or that marketing can offer. So I think that relationship, I think, is the other key challenge.
In summary, those two key challenges. One, maybe they're not ready, not mature enough. Maybe they haven't, as I always say, got to the end of their rope. They're still growing. Maybe they're at the start of the business and what they're doing is getting them so far. They're not at the end of the rope.
Yeah.
Maybe the backgrounds of the people that you're working with as well isn't of a marketing background. Maybe it's a sales background or an R&D background. So therefore, that's what they believe is going to drive the business.
Yes.
And maybe they haven't had maybe positive experiences of marketers in the past. Maybe they've been working with marketers that are more in the support function space than necessarily in the commercial agenda space.
Yes, yes, I think that's true. And in that sense, they can pigeonhole you because of their experience.
Yeah, because they're going to be carrying their own biases and their own experiences.
Yeah.
So as you say, that re-education of how we can define and deliver growth is really important.
Yeah, it is.
The other thing you mentioned there is about a relationship that works. Tell me more about what you think are the key elements that make a relationship work.
I think it's a lot about that person being marketing savvy enough to know that they need marketing. It's an open door, if you like, and they just may not be so clear about, you know, how to affect marketing that works in a business. So I think that's key. It's interesting. I think a lot of it is around relationships that work generally, not just in the marketing context, and trusting each other, being open with each other, and then being, I think, generally supportive of you. I think those are some of the elements that I see that make it work.
And I guess supportive of them as well, looking to ways in which if their agenda or their approach is different to yours, how you can demonstrate that you can support them with theirs through marketing and through that relationship.
I think that's a really interesting point, actually, because I think it is mutual, isn't it? And I think a lot of, as you work as a marketer in-house, almost like an internal consultant role, how can I help? How can I help this person? You know, we're talking about your boss, how you can help your boss achieve his or her objectives. So it's definitely mutual.
The other thing that you mentioned there, Rachel, also is around competencies and being competent as a marketer yourself, but also explaining the competencies of marketers and I guess investing in themselves to make sure that they do. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, I think there seems often an educative aspect to what we do in marketing, kind of explaining what marketing is and isn't. So framing the conversations, if you like. And I think in terms of how you get shift purchase in enabling buy. And I think a really good way of doing that is using training or strategic projects to facilitate that shift. So training, it can help facilitate that shift, but it can also have a really helpful educative aspect to it. So there was one role that I remember being in, and this was the organisation that was relatively new to marketing. And I set up a marketing 101 training course for some people in the firm who were involved in business development. So we kind of needed to help them understand what marketing was, how that linked to business development, how the two could be mutually supportive. And one of the byproducts of that was it helped to shift the buy into marketing. And another example of the educative aspect is, so the 12-month programs that we run with clients are very practical and applied and necessarily get people around the business involved. So they're involved in doing the exercises. And again, that has an educative aspect. And because you are working with people, it demonstrates, you know, what you can do and how you approach things. And I think the same is true of strategic projects. So I've used, for instance, a project like key account management for that purpose. It needed to be done anyway, so I instigated it. But what I did was I drew a number of people around the business and I noticed a positive shift in buy-in because of that. So it could be other strategic projects like brand positioning or rolling out a new CRM system. So all of those projects that need contributions from other people outside the marketing team just helps you get that shift. It helps to demonstrate what marketing is about, what marketing can do. So I think both training and strategic projects are really useful to help shift people's attitude.
I couldn't agree more. And for me, writing strategy, whether that's a one-year plan or a three-year strategy with a cross-functional team, almost helps build all those relationships from the offset, gets everybody on the same page, allows everyone to feel seen and heard and that their contribution is valid. It means that you are building a strategy with appreciating any of the barriers that might come in the way, from understanding the challenges in the wider business and how we bring things to market. Also means that when you do come and ask, as you've just said, we're going to run this strategic project and why we're doing it, they're already warm. They already know why. They already feel part of it, you know, with you, for you. It definitely has a massive difference. And one of the courses that I run is Insight to Strategy. And the reason for me is when we spend time as marketers developing actionable insight, we as marketers, the thing that we have that the rest of the organization doesn't have as much of is the customer voice. So if we can use our leverage of the customer insight and the benefits that brings by doing things that satisfy that customer voice and therefore having greater commercial success, and we use that as the foundation of a strategy, so something we have that they don't have necessarily, or a way of at least taking the voices from the sales force and consolidating them and building them into actionable insight, we need to apply them somewhere, right? We need to apply them somewhere. And I often find that strategy is the place to do it, because that's the thing that's going to beat through the whole year. Is going to be at the foundation of the strategy. Of course, quick wins can also help of showing how you can use that, as we said earlier, to help them achieve their goals. But strategy is where it's at. And it's so important for the alignment, I find, as well.
Yeah. And I think it's a better strategy if you include other people as well. You get buy-in, but you also, I think, you know, end up getting a better strategy. I don't think the most senior marketer, if they go away in a room and write a strategy, it's not going to be as good as if you involve other people and other voices and get that insight and get that information, get that different perspective.
And do you think getting buy-in is a challenge for marketers at all levels?
I think it is. But I think what we've been talking about is actually the same whatever level. So I think marketing, getting buy-in might be different for different roles in marketing. So I think if getting buy-in, if you're a generalist, for instance, or perhaps you're in a managing event specifically, or PR, or your focus is as a CRM manager, I think getting buy-in involves different things for those different roles. But I think the principles are the same at whatever level. So I think you can use those same tools like work cross-functional strategic projects or being involved in training. The other advice around kind of getting buy-in is getting allies, seeking allies within the business. And hopefully one would hope that it's your boss as a starting point, but there will be other people around the business who can be allies as well. So no, I think the advice is the same, whatever level. It's just it might change depending on the role that you have.
Tell us more about finding those allies.
Yeah, I think, as I say, I think hopefully it is your boss. But I was talking to a marketer a couple of weeks ago who actually she didn't feel her boss was an ally. And so my advice was, in that case, you need to go external and seek a coach or a mentor or a sounding board, as much for sanity as anything else. It can be a very lonely place. I think through working things like strategic projects and training, because you start working with people, helping them to achieve their objectives, helping them to achieve their plans, I think you can start building allies around the business in that way. And I think it is important because I think it helps to demonstrate that you know what you're talking about. And hopefully it's like word of mouth recommendation, essentially, isn't it? They'll say, yeah, you know, so-and-so was really good that I worked with them on this project and this is what they helped me do.
And what's clear from what you're describing is that a really great place to start to building allies is supporting others to achieve their objectives, their plans. What happens when we need to make that shift, when we realise that we can step change the growth through a different direction or through a different strategic approach? How do we then get buy-in on our plans?
I suspect to get buy-in to our own plans, where we're actually leading the charge, as it were, I think that's probably only possible, or it's made easier, if you are already operating at a strategic board level. You've got the ear of the board. Perhaps you are even on the board. I think you have to have earned your stripes before you're able to do that. And that might mean you've earned your stripes outside the organization. You come in as a senior marketer, or you've grown and developed within the organization and you've earned the right to forge the way with your own plans. So I think, again, it comes back to context, doesn't it, in being able to get that buy-in and being able to lead, being given the mandate to lead, I guess.
I suppose my other question is, what if we're not given the mandate to lead? What if the business that we're working in is set in its ways, or not necessarily set in the ways, just doesn't know what the other way is? What advice would you give to those businesses?
I think it's more advice to those individuals, really. I mean, I think what that would indicate to me is that as a marketer in that organization, you would certainly need to be pretty resilient and persistent. And I know, you know, along the way, a lot of what I've done has involved absolute persistence. Oh, I can't do it that way. Let me see if I can try another way and another way and another way. So you have to keep faith in a way. But I think there is a point also which you might think this company is not going to change anytime soon and it might be time to leave. So if you feel that you're not thriving and that you, despite all your best efforts, you really can't add value or make a difference in the way that you want in the time scale that you want to, I think it may come to a point where you have to wonder whether it might be better to change companies. You know, perhaps you're not right for each other. Perhaps they're not mature enough yet. And I know that's easier said than done and it can take confidence to move, but I wonder whether sometimes that is the best thing for you and the company.
That's a really great piece of advice. And I love the added use of yet in there as well.
Yeah, you might be willing to stay until they are mature. But I know I've been in a role where I probably should have moved before then. And there were reasons why I didn't. But I took that as an informed decision. But if those reasons hadn't been in place, I probably should have left. I think it was at a point where I thought, actually, I'm not sure I can make the difference. So I hung on and I hung on, thought, oh, no, I can make a difference. No, I don't want to leave until I've done that or I've had that result or that impact. And sometimes it's just not possible in a certain time scale.
As I'm listening to you, it makes me think of also a similar situation that I had also, where I was working in a sales R&D led business and marketing was very much seen as a support function. And the next role that they almost had lined up for me in their heads as to where they believe the growth should come from was in sales. And I didn't want to move into sales. Mm-hmm. And it made me really assess, is this the right organization for me? Because in reality, even though I've changed a lot of things in the way in which they did marketing and bringing the consumer focus in, I knew that if I stayed, I'd be working in an environment that wasn't going to allow me to really use all the skills that I wanted to use and for marketing to be at the forefront, leading the way. And so I did move and it was a great move. So that's also something for our listeners to reflect on as well.
Yeah, that's interesting what you described there, because that was an organization that was very sales focused, but didn't even see the opportunity to bring marketing up to an equal level to sales. Didn't seem to be even considering that, never mind marketing leading the way.
No, they didn't. They didn't. And the progression was either into a sales role or into an R&D role, not necessarily into a more senior geography or marketing role. And I think that was quite telling of the time. And I definitely made the right decision.
Yeah.
But as you said, it also takes bravery to say, how much more, to your point, resilience, persistence do I have to try and make the change as one in an organization of thousands? And how long will that take for them to realize that?
Yeah. And I suspect in those situations, until the person at the top is different and there is a different culture almost, I think, where they're actually changing the context, it is quite difficult for marketing to thrive in anything more than a support function.
Yeah, it was taking the product, bringing it to market, repeat. And even though in that time I managed to get more of a consumer voice at head office, managed to change the way in which we approached things, the way in which the brand was positioned, the way in which we showed up. Fundamentally, it was still in the comms space. It was never across intrinsically, strategically in the full tactical mix. So yeah, it was the right decision at the time. And on that point of right decisions at the time in our careers, I'd love to hear about your career highs and lows.
So I joined Watersight Business Thinking as MD nearly 2.5 years ago. And before I took that role, I spent about 3 weeks thinking about it and reflecting on my career and where I wanted to go for the next 10 years. So it was quite a pivotal moment career-wise for me. And one of the things that emerged from that thinking was that I realized that I'd worked best in certain situations and where I would consider my career highs. And that was where I had a really good relationship with my boss. And the context in the company enabled me to do my best work. And I really enjoyed being in or leading the team that I worked with. So that's, I think, one element of my career highs. I think also for me, as with most people, I guess, the highs are often been about impact. I like to look back at any job and think, this is what I've achieved or changed. And those are my highs within that particular job. And obviously, it's especially good if you get some kind of recognition for those achievements. And I could name specific career highs, but I thought it was quite interesting to reflect on the career highs were in certain contexts and with certain relationships. I think the lows, I think I can point to a couple of lows in my career. The first was for a company that was going through a period of upheaval and introspection, and it became a very difficult and toxic culture for various reasons. And I remember feeling really isolated and alone. My relationship with my boss was not good. It seemed like everything he said to me was negative or critical. And I remember my heart sank every time the phone rang and I thought it might be him. It was a really unhappy and unproductive time. And I think the second low was also at a point when the company I was at then was going through change. It was just after the financial crash. So it was kind of 2008 time. And their two main products took an absolute nosedive. So they spent 12 months going around each team, reviewing them, consultation, deciding which jobs to keep and cut. And they ended up halving the workforce after about 12 or 18 months. But rather than making quick and thoughtful decisions and implementing them compassionately, they eked out the pain over a year. And in fact, my marketing team was under consultation twice in that period. And I think sometimes they took what I felt to be quite partisan and political decisions. So in the end, my job disappeared, by which time I felt absolutely liberated and really wanted to leave. But for those 12 to 18 months, it felt like a real career low. You just can't do good work if you have that uncertainty looming over you for that long. It's really hard just to continue to do a decent job in that context. And I think when I was reflecting on this question, I think what I think was quite interesting in itself was that both of those career lows were to do with times of change. And it's not that change itself, that's not a problem, because I think we've all been involved in change that's been really exciting and positive. It's how change and difficult times are managed that made both those instances such a low career-wise. In both instances, I felt in a really vulnerable position and it took quite a while to regain my confidence. And in both cases, what helped, I think, was being in control of the things that were in my gift of control, because there was plenty outside of my control. So having a plan and options for me is always a way of dealing with those low points.
And it's not uncommon that I see that in times of change, we do feel increased levels of uncertainty. You know, as human beings, we do need to have a mix of things that are certain in our control, the routine, the rituals, things that we do every day, things that keep us grounded, provide us with comfort, but also a level of uncertainty. And There'll be things that come into that uncertainty bucket, not out of our choosing. So as you've just said, changes in the business, their commercial performance that's then impacting their focus and therefore your role. And then there'll be things of your choosing, like experiences or holidays or things that you want to be going after. And as human beings, we need a mix of the two. But it's really important to acknowledge, as you did do, that it created too much uncertainty for you for too long outside of your control. And that then does impact your confidence, your motivation, how you're showing up in the world. And unfortunately, I've seen this happen a few times in different businesses, that they want to make change, but they don't always think about the impact of that change on every individual and how that change will impact every individual based on their balances of uncertainty and certainty for their life as a whole, let alone the impact that that change is having on the wider organisation. Mm. So thank you for sharing so openly and honestly the personal impact that had on you, in the hope that others will think, as they go through periods of change, about the individuals and how that will be impacting them also. Also, as I was listening to your career highs and lows, almost the advice that you've given us throughout today's podcast is almost reflective of what you've experienced around the importance to have a good line manager, boss, that ally, that supporter, that someone who you can pick up the phone to and have an open, honest and supportive conversation. You know, you also talked about the payoff for those resilience and persistence and that recognition, also why that's so important. I always think it's great when I hear career highs and lows and see how that's informed us to be the marketeers and humans we are today.
It does, doesn't it?
It really does.
Your experience does shape then what you give as pieces, nuggets of wisdom, if you like, to other people.
It really, really does. And thank you so much for your time so far on today's podcast, all your nuggets and wisdom throughout your marketing career so far.
My absolute pleasure.
But as you know, we always finish on the following question. What one piece of advice would you give to marketers of tomorrow?
Well, as I alluded to earlier, I've been in marketing a long time, 35 years this year, actually.
Congratulations.
It kind of snuck up on me somewhat. And I think it's a much, much more complex and demanding world now for marketers than when I started. I think it can be exciting, but I suspect it can also be a bit overwhelming. So I think my one piece of advice is around encouraging the marketers of tomorrow to think about how to make sense of this very complex, fast changing world. And I think there are two ways of doing that. I think the first is to keep the principles of marketing in mind and to use sound thinking and planning tools when deciding which of the millions of tools or tech or techniques or activities you can use or choose. Marketing is based on, you know, humans and customers and people. And I don't think that's changed very much over quite a long period of time. So I think the principles definitely do still apply. I think it's very easy to follow the latest shiny thing, not always the best approach. So bring any decisions about marketing back to those basics, those same principles. Who is my audience? What do they want or need? How can we solve their problems? What are the messages? How can we best engage with them? And so on. I think the other element to making sense of that changing world is to actively look to develop the skills that will keep your future employability high. So kind of be in control of your own career, if you like. So those skills are not necessarily tech specific. So, you know, clearly they're important. I don't think AI, for instance, is going anywhere soon. But I think top of the list for years is interesting, has not necessarily been very marketing specific skills. It's things like communication, problem solving, data analysis. So be aware, always be aware of what skills are needed now and in the future. Identify those gaps so you can make sure that you can keep your employability as high as possible. Think about what you want, what you're motivated to do, skill up accordingly. I think that growth mindset and curiosity to keep learning is absolutely essential. And so I think that's my key piece of advice to the marketers of tomorrow. We're never finished.
We're never finished. We're always works in progress. And as I always say, make sure you take the reins of your career so it's happening for you, not to you. Great piece of advice, Rachel. And thanks again for your time.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning into the Whole Marketer podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do like, follow and share. The Whole Marketer is here to support and empower you and your teams with the latest technical skills, soft and leadership skills and behaviours, and personal understanding for a successful, fulfilling marketing career and life as a whole. For support, resources and more information on how we can help you to become a Whole Marketer and build Whole Marketing teams, go to www.thewholemarketer.com.